NFL Draft Podcast. I'm Trevor Sycamore. With me is Benjamin Solak. Ben, as we promised the good people, we got some funerals to do today. We got some teams to bury. Their season is over, and we are ushering them into the afterlife that is the 2020 NFL Draft. It's a sad moment, but at the same time, this is where we all live. We all live in this afterlife version of football with the draft. Are you playing bagpipes? I can barely.
Amazing Grace, yes, okay, indeed. All right, it feels appropriate.
That's good.
You were saying about this afterlife of living in the draft.
Yes, no, it's always a sad moment. You never like saying goodbye to something that you cared so deeply about. The 2019 NFL season, but all good things must come to an end. And that's going to be the case for five teams today as we put them 6 feet under via a tombstone pile driver, Undertaker style.
Amen.
Amen.
That was really nicely done.
Thanks.
Especially because we didn't discuss it beforehand.
We really did not. I just kind of like went off and you pulled up the bagpipes music and maybe I can just enhance the volume.
Because here's the thing is like if we had opened with like everything is delicious, it would not have appropriately given the spirit of this podcast.
Right, I felt like
this YouTube video that I found in like 2 seconds beforehand made way more sense for what we were going to be doing in terms of this podcast.
Probably true. All right, Ben. Yeah. As we elaborated there, we got five teams to bury. Five seasons are done. These teams are cooked. Which one do you want to do? Let's start with the Jets. Because okay. The Jets, the week before, as if people needed more evidence to not really understand how football works, us right. included. Jets come out and whoop up on the Dallas Cowboys. Then go scoreless into the third quarter. Wait, what was the final score of that game?
I have no idea. I mean, I checked in at halftime, saw what was going on, 26-0. Safety. 20, no, no, no. Where is it?
New York Jets.
Doors. NFL.
33-0. They didn't score.
33-0.
They didn't score.
Trevor, let us not forget that I picked the Jets to cover.
I didn't, right?
No, you didn't. You're very smart.
Okay. Yeah.
You hate to see it.
Yeah, you might have gotten killed this week. We'll get to that on Thursday.
I'm pretty sure, like off of what I remember, I think I got this week.
Yeah, it's probably not good for your boy, Ben. So, they face the Cowboys, beat up on the Cowboys, and then get shut out by the Patriots. Okay, I get it. It's the Patriots, but you're not supposed to look this bad. Right,
but Sam Darnold throwing three interceptions is Sam Darnold throwing three interceptions regardless of who he's playing.
No,
you know what I mean?
Four.
Like four, right? Four interceptions. I saw like, you know, the whole quote where he was like, you know, I'm seeing ghosts out there, which people were like reacting to pretty explosively.
Yeah, I didn't really understand why people were freaking out about that.
If you're seeing ghosts, you're seeing ghosts. Like what, you think he's not? He just threw three bad picks. Like he is. Good, he knows. He recognizes. But yeah, to me, it's we love to like. There's been a push to christen Darnold in year two that I think has been overzealous in the sense that Darnold still remains a player who is better outside of structure than he is inside of structure, and that mold can succeed, Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not regular that it does. And you need to have at least a baseline level of success within structure to keep the offense kind of on schedule. And I think Darnold still needs to get there. I was lower on Darnold than most coming out in the 2018 NFL draft. I had a second round grade on him because to me, he was a developmental player. You needed to, year three was the year you were expecting to see Darnold become a franchise quarterback. I think year two, it's still a little bit too early to put those expectations on him.
Yeah. And I think that going into the funeral portion of this discussion here, I don't think the quarterback position is going to be one that they're going to emphasize. I think that Darnold is certainly their guy for the foreseeable future. Even if he struggles throughout the rest of the year, there have been signs to where you could point to it and say, okay, this guy, there's something to work with here. We're not ready to give up on him. I don't think they're anywhere close to that. The head coach, I mean, let's face it, it's not really what you want in Adam Gase. He's had quite a few failed experiences and journeys around the NFL. So it's not like that is completely blameless either. I think that they would change the head coach before they change the quarterback even at this point. And I think I like some of the moves that the Jets have made. They're just not there yet. Now, I didn't think that they were 33-0 to the Patriots, but apparently, like, everybody is. So, I guess that's just where we are here in the Patriots, the next chapter of the Patriots dynasty. So, Ben, when you look at this Jets team, where are the early needs we think that they could be going either in the draft or free agency? More importantly, in the draft, just because obviously we are draft-focused, but...
Right, so the New York Jets in the offseason go through great lengths such as to improve the offensive line, bringing in multiple new players and new positions, namely, markedly among which is Kelechi Osemele. They traded Oakland for Kelechi Osemele. Now, I don't know if you've been following this. Osemele is like in drastic and violent odds with the Jets management right now. He did not play against the Patriots. He hasn't played since, like, I think, like, middle of September. Osemele was fined for conduct detrimental to the team because Osemele is keeping himself out because he feels like he is not injury. Or he feels like he is injured, excuse me. I think it's a shoulder injury, it's like a torn labrum or something. The Jets don't believe that he needs surgery until the offseason. And so, like, again, when we talk about, and this is something I brought up on the podcast before, when there's, you know, the issues of Adam Gase being hired, which doesn't make much sense to me. When there's the issue of Kelechi Osemele not knowing, like, you know, trying to sit because he thinks he needs surgery and the Jets not letting him. When you have, like, multiple injuries and multiple areas of the franchise, you typically have a principal problem. The decision maker, the man in charge, the man on top is responsible trickle down throughout for all of these. And, like, Woody Johnson has not necessarily been lauded as the greatest owner on the face of the planet here. The Mike Maccagnan debacle for the 2019 NFL draft being one of them. And so the Jets have issues at multiple spots. And I think that until ownership revamps or is replaced, they're probably going to continue to do so. So that being said, the additions of players such as Tom Compton and Kelechi Osemele, you know, in lieu of like James Carter and Dakota Dozier.
Yeah.
There wasn't a significant improvement on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Offensive tackle remains an issue.
They've put a lot of resources into it, but like when we're looking at the top here, you know, the Jets are poised to have a top five pick. I'm thinking O-line's probably their strongest, like their strongest need to address.
Yes, absolutely right. So yeah, when you look at potential picks within the top five, the Jets are the most likely candidate right now, in my opinion, to take a player like Andrew Thomas out of Georgia Tristan Wirfs out of Iowa. Now, I will say they've begun starting third-round rookie Chuma Adoga at right tackle. Adoga is a bit of a project, but he's looked promising over the last couple of weeks. Adoga may be able to lock in as one of your starting tackles of the future, in which case that alleviates the need a little bit. But you're still starting Alex Lewis and Brian Winters right now at left to right guard. You have Kelvin Beachum right now as your left tackle as well. Beachum is, you know, Beachum could warrant an upgrade if you wanted to go there. You still have issues on the offensive line. So those two positions, and then the other one that sticks out to me, which is stuck out to me for the Jets for the past 85,000 years, they do not draft edge rushers. They drafted Jakai Polite, but it was a flyer. It was nobody thinks everything's flight's going to bust. Work. Right. Everything's flight's going to bust, but he's still here in the third round. He's got crazy talent. Let's take him and see what happens. Also, for Maccagnan, screw it. Who cares? Like, you probably had a sense he was going to get fired. So just draft Polite and see what happens. You know what I mean? So they've been rushing Jordan Jenkins off the edge since 2016. It's not effective. It hasn't been effective. And it's not good news for anybody. They've had decent production out of Terrell Basham, and then out of 48, which I think is Brandon Copeland, if memory serves, but he's been playing. No, Copeland's 51. Harvey Lange, they've got a kid who I do not know, but he's 48, and he's flashed every single time I've watched him. Regardless, they've had some decent, you know, production for backup guys, but they need a true premier edge rusher. So you're talking about if you're picking high enough
number
to look at Chase
Wait,
Young.
Number 48?
Yes.
That's Jordan Jenkins.
Oh, okay, so there you go. Jordan Jenkins is looking better this year. Good deal.
I was going to say, I'm like, I think that's Jenkins, but I'm going to look this up because I want to call him out because he kind of just pooped on Jordan Jenkins. But
right. Well, I mean, Jenkins was like in 2016, 2017, when they were playing, it was not looking good. You know what I mean? But if I think
he had his best year last year, did he not?
Yeah. I thought Fournier was playing pretty good ball this year. So it turns out maybe Jordan Jenkins, I'm turning around on him. Okay. Regardless.
Yeah, without Jenkins, knowing, unbeknownst to you, you are turning around on him.
Exactly. This is why, and this is the great issue of like number scouting. I do this all the time. We're like, you know, be like, oh, like, you know, like 18 on Clemson is good. And then I don't look up who that is like a month. I just forget to, you know what I mean? But anyway, even then, Jenkins is not somebody who should be prohibitive to you in terms of improving the edge position. And you still have nobody really on the opposite side. Leonard Williams is going to be a trade block guy. He's one of your big ends. Like, you need guys who can come off the edge. So Epinesa is interesting in terms of a big end. And then also, obviously, Chase Young can be one of your stand-up guys if you're picking high enough to get to the Chase Young sweepstakes. So that's, I mean, like, to me, those are the big needs early. We're talking about top five pick, Thomas, Wirfs, Young and Epinesa,
it's
got to
be something. Yeah, it's got to be something on the trenches. As much as I would love to picture, and I tweeted about this last night, you'd love to picture the Jets offense as it is right now, getting some guys back healthy with hopefully a more stable coaching situation. Adding a player like a Jerry Jeudy or a CeeDee Lamb or a Henry Ruggs to this offense, if you had a creative offensive mind, I think that could be a lot of fun with guys like Robbie Anderson and Quincy Enunwa, Jamison Crowder, Chris Herndon, Le'Veon Bell, like all those guys. It get real fun if you have that group together and you add another one of those stud wide receivers. I just don't think that you can pass up on the trenches. They're just not good enough. And, you know, if I'm picking for the Jets today, I'm picking Andrew Thomas. That's who I would pick for the Jets if I'm picking today. Who would you, like, if you were picking today, who would you pick for the Jets?
Right now in the mock draft simulator, which is not, I don't think, adjusted yet to the Monday Night Football results because we're recording this literally right after, but we're looking at the Jets with a top five pick. If Andrew Thomas is there, Thomas is a number two player on my board overall, and then with positional value considered, a franchise left tackle is a big deal. So that's a no-brainer pick to me. To the wide receiver point, I think this is where you look at a really good class and you say, okay, you know what I mean? Like, if we're going to miss on it in round one, we're going to miss on it in round one. This team added Jamison Crowder, gave him 17 targets against the Bills in week one, and then since then has not used him as a high-volume receiver, which is, like, very weird to me. Adam Gase, why is he here? But if you retain Robbie Anderson, which he'll probably be a trade block guy again, but if you retain Robbie and you're obviously going to retain Crowder, get Enunwa back, you really don't need to address wide receiver that early. I think you want another body who can be a potential starter for you, a wide receiver two or three, but I really don't think you need to go too hard on, like, you know, trying to get a wide receiver one. So Jets at 37 right now in round two. Well, Jeudy Lamb, T. Higgins, and Henry Ruggs are off the board on this simulation.
Sure,
that gives you Chenault,
sure,
Rager.
Or cancel the machine.
Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, you've got plenty of wide receiver talent remaining behind those guys, where a day two pick at wide receiver makes a lot of sense for me for the Jets. And then edge-wise, you still have guys like Curtis Weaver, Kenny Willekes. You have Carlos Basham, Terrell Basham's cousin, I think. So, like, you've got good edge talent as well there. So, yeah, I think offensive tackle is the spot where you want to give him that top five pick, and you can get good day two talent at edge and wide receiver later.
Yep, I agree. Did you want to do a third round pick, or you just want to go to the next team? But, I mean, we kind of addressed the needs there. It's kind of...
Yeah. Well, the one thing we should talk about is... I think the one other position we should talk about is the Jets have to take a long look at benching Tremaine Johnson, who has played really bad football.
Yeah.
Seeing what they have, seeing what Brian Poole is on the outside, seeing if Nate Hairston is a starter. And if not, then you're talking about corner as a potential day two pick. Because, I mean, I don't know how easy it is to get out of the Tremaine Johnson contract. I can check it out. But they paid a hefty price for Johnson, and he has not been jack diddly for them. I mean, just nothing and a half. Mm-hmm. Eventually you got to cut a loss, especially because it's a new general manager there in Joe Douglas. You expect him to be willing to move on from the other guy's mistake. Johnson would accrue $12 million dead cap if he was cut before 2020. That said, and you're only saving about $3 million after 2020 into 2021, then it makes a bit more sense. You kill $8 million, but you save $9 million. So they might hold on to him for another year, but, like, Johnson just has not been it for them. So they got to talk about corner as well.
But I don't think they move. I think you're right. They'd probably rounds three or four maybe look at corner. But like you said, because of the price tag of Johnson, you know you're not exactly about to, like, strike it gold with a winning window next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they would probably hang on to him after you read those contract details, and make more sense to, okay, trenches, this year for sure. I think both sides, those are the emphasis for the big picks. Then you probably go corner, I think, next year. Makes a lot more sense, at least with like a priority pick. So, yeah, that's what I would, that's the direction that I would probably go in. But I do think that it's trenches all the way for the New York Jets, at least for this year. We'll stay in the division. We'll go with Miami. We'll talk about this a little bit.
Like, is this even a funeral for Miami? This is like an exaltation. Like, well done.
Like a celebration of life, almost, you know?
Right.
Yeah. No, that's a good way
Could not be more proud of what the Miami Dolphins have done over their 2019 lifespan. Really, it's a beautiful thing.
You know, I didn't think of it that way, but you're correct. And we'll talk about this more on Thursday's pod when we're going over the games. But not only did the Dolphins cover, they gave their management a little bit of a scare with Ryan Fitzpatrick there. Coming in and could not care less about the tank.
Should not have doubted a man who witnessed Fitzmagic firsthand, boldly in front of him last year.
I know. I tried to listen, man. I tried to tell you I wasn't going to bet against him. But anyways, Miami still does lose. They keep intact the must-see pay-per-view television that is going to be Week 16, the Miami Dolphins versus Cincinnati Bengals. Loser will probably get the number one overall pick. So Dolphins are 0-16. They have a negative, sorry, Dolphins are 0-6, not 16 yet. They have a negative 148 net points total on the season.
You ready for the real stat? The Patriots are plus 175, right? Patriots are plus 175 on the year. If you combine all the other positive point differentials in the AFC right now, you get 175.
The Patriots are better at winning than the Dolphins are at purposefully losing.
Heroicism. Amazing.
That is art
embodied.
Truly. Put it in the loop. Unbelievable. I'm about to tweet that out like the second that you start talking about what the Dolphins team needs are, which are vast. Dolphins team needs. We so far on our website, draftnetwork.com, we have quarterback, offensive tackle, edge, running back, corner, and interior O-line. Oh wow, that's it. And those are just primary needs.
Yeah, I mean, like, they have, firstly, obviously, and this is true for a few teams, yeah, but they have no don't needs, which is
there are not many teams that have no don't needs.
Yep. And then, yeah, they have like what, six primary needs, I think?
Yeah. I think they have the most. They've got to have the most.
Which is like not how primary works.
So right. We can't choose though. The roster's ass. I think with the first pick, whether they're picking number one, number two, or let's even say outside chance number three, it's got to be a quarterback for the Dolphins. It just doesn't start anywhere else. You can talk, you can sit here and talk yourself into, okay, well, maybe you'd rather wait for Trevor Lawrence. That's not a thing, guys. It's not a thing.
It's never been a thing.
You cannot just say, oh, we're going to tank for 2 years in a row. Nothing in this league is guaranteed, including even trying to lose. So you just never know what is going to happen. So to think that, oh, wow, I'd rather have them tank a second year in a row, use that pick somewhere else. And I guess that they could if they didn't want to go a quarterback for whatever godforsaken reason at the top of this draft. They could go somewhere else and, I guess, in a different way, maybe get Trevor Lawrence next year. But this can't be a plan. It's too far out. Nothing in the league is guaranteed. It's way too fickle to think that you could plan for not only is it crazy enough to already be thinking of the draft almost at the beginning of the year, like it looked like the Dolphins were doing as they started to offload their talent. You can't be thinking 2 years ahead. It just doesn't work like that. So with all that said, even though they had Rosen,
you can think of, yeah,
I think that they're going quarterback.
Right. You can think 2 years ahead in terms of accumulating capital for a rebuild, but you can't be targeting specific players. It just does, like, There's so much that can happen between now and then. It's just, it would be impossibly risky. And maybe, like, you know, the Dolphins don't know that and don't realize that. I think that's the really big issue for them. But, right, this is, you know, you reloaded for this year. now go ahead and kill, you know, this year and kill this draft. And if you have opportunities to acquire more 2021 capital, which, I mean, they did in the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade, right? Then go ahead and do it. But it's not going to, it's not like, you know, it's not the priority of how you're approaching it. I agree. The first pick, right, and this is going to be your own pick, Miami's pick from where they fall record-wise. Quarterback, it's a given. Rosen doesn't matter. Fitzpatrick doesn't matter. Your new coaching staff, the whole plan of the rebuild, the whole justification for putting your fan base and your sponsors and your big, you know, box ticket buyers through this whole season was, well, guess what? We're going to go get, like, you know, the quarterback next year that's going to, you know, bring the Miami Dolphins back to Dan Marino heydays, whatever. So, yeah, it's absolutely got to be a quarterback. I mean, right now, odds to evens, you know, Joe Burrow to Justin Herbert, I think the odds have probably switched in terms of who it is, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, I think, wild, dude.
I think everybody's kind of turning around to the fact that, okay, we, and I think I talked about this on the podcast last week, we anointed Tua as the future number one overall pick 2 years ago when he made that throw to Devonta Smith to win the national championship coming in relief for Jalen Hurts. Like, it was at that moment everybody was like, there it is. There's the future number one overall pick. And I think that, I'm not trying to say that, like, Tua has been bad since, but it's like what Trevor Lawrence is going through. There's ups and downs. And so, like, you find that, okay, this guy's not the perfect football player that we maybe thought after an overtime period in the national championship. And so, with Tua then not, like, breaking the narrative, because it was only a matter of time, that he wasn't this perfect prospect, now all of a sudden that brings in room for other guys who are improving to maybe be in the same conversation. And I think that whether you have Tua number one or Joe Burrow number one, the point is now that we're having a conversation which is good. Because Burrow is playing to a level at which he should be considered a candidate to go number one overall. And Tua is also in that as well. But he just doesn't look as perfect as maybe people put him on a pedestal to be, unrealistically. But that's what we were talking about really over the last year. And so the rise of Joe Burrow has been awesome, not just for Burrow himself and because we've seen a lot of fun football, but also I think it's allowed us to come back to earth a little bit on Tua and for it to open up a discussion of these two guys could really be franchise changers. And I'm not sure we'd be having this same kind of discussion, even though it might have been true, if Tua was going off like at a perfect level. Does that make sense? Do you understand what I'm saying there? Like if no. Tua, so you, okay, all right. Let me walk you back then. If Tua, who's having a great year, but obviously he's had a little bit of injury concerns, he's had some throws that people have seen that have been like, okay. He obviously had some of the college football playoff stuff where he was not great under pressure. If Tua had since been really, really great, and nearly, I guess, like near the expectation level that we thought he was at, I feel as though we would not be as open to how well Joe Burrow is playing. Like, we wouldn't be as honest with it because all we would be able to talk about was Tua, and we wouldn't give Joe Burrow the props that he deserves to go high in the draft. Does that make sense?
Yeah, though I would push back on the idea that Tua has done anything wrong.
I don't think wrong. See, again, I don't think wrong. I just think the expectations that we had of him like 2 years ago were so unrealistic.
Right. And that's the thing is, like, I make a really strong point of not critically, like, not giving any takes because I have not yet critically watched any, especially quarterbacks, before they're eligible. And so that's the thing is, like, when I saw the hystericism over Tua in 2018 or 2017 and then the hystericism over Trevor Lawrence in 2018, I just, you know, said, okay, probably none of this is true. I'm just going to watch the player when he becomes eligible, and I'm going to see what I think about him. And so for me with Tua, like, I had never sat down, you know, before, like, in his sophomore season or, like, you know, after the Clemson National Championship game, where obviously Alabama got beat up a little bit, and, like, watched that, you know, film in the immediate aftermath and said, like, this is my opinion. Just once it was the season, it was time to scout quarterbacks. I watched Herbert, and then I watched Tua. And to me, just Tua is a consummately talented player for his age, who projects nicely to the NFL given his traits, who has a high ceiling. Like, to me, he just there's no, and when you factor in the leadership and the off-field stuff that, you know, NFL teams really care about, I struggle to find a way to convince myself he's not first overall pick caliber. Now, I do agree with you in the sense that in terms of players who have given us an alternative this year, going into the season, we believed it would be Herbert at this juncture halfway through college football. It is Burrow. and the possible other player at one. But to me, Tua's done nothing to lose that position, and he's done it for longer. And you know, I'm not as worried about just catching Burrow at the peak of his college career. Tua, I think, has put together now two consistent seasons of just tremendous, dazzling play.
Yeah,
and I'm oriented on that.
Not to take away from it, I just felt like we didn't. As we were watching Tua over the last 2 years, we like wouldn't even allow the dude to be human. And I think that allowing Tua to be human is both good and healthy, not only for how we look at him as a prospect, but I think also now allows us to appreciate Joe Burrow the way that his play has warranted. And I think that was my main point in all of that. So, outside of quarterback, the Dolphins got a lot of picks. So, where else are we looking in this draft for the Dolphins?
Right, so quarterback, whoever it is, and then all of a sudden now that Steelers pick that was four a second ago, well, Pittsburgh decided to go ahead and beat Los Angeles. Pittsburgh decided to show some life with old Devlin Hodges out of Sanford. So now 10 is where we have it currently in the order, and if the Steelers continue to hang around 6 and 10, it's likely where it's going to end up. So now we're outside of the range of the franchise offensive tackle that the Dolphins so desperately need now that they've traded away Laremy Tunsil, and they let Juwan James walk in free agency. We're away from Chase Young and the franchise edge rusher since you traded Robert Quinn and you let Cameron Wake walk, right? So you had all this talent leave. You've only got one pick in the top nine. You got a pick at the end of the top 10. You're looking at potentially players like A.J. Epenesa sticking around if he's there for that long. Maybe Alex Leatherwood is a top 10 pick, the offensive tackle out of Alabama. You're also looking at potentially a top corner. Let's not forget that while they still have Xavier Howard, opposite him is nobody, Eric Rowe right now. And the safety room is even decent with Minka Fitzpatrick gone in terms of Bobby McCain or Rashad Jones. But Minka was your slot corner, and you've got nobody to replace him as well. So Coverman is also the potential that you could be looking for at 10. And then, once you add the new weapon at quarterback, you're going to want to pair him with talent at potentially running back, talent at wide receiver, and even talent at tight end if you want to sail the ship on Gesicki. So they're going to take a long look at guys like CeeDee Lamb and Henry Ruggs, who are probably going to be available around the 10th overall pick. To me, I would love to see them go trenches oriented. To me, that's the way you start the build, especially because those players typically take a little bit more time to be effective and productive. You rarely see a really effective offensive tackle in year one as a rookie. You can say the same thing for wide receiver. I get that. So, you know, you want to go wide receiver early as well. So A.J. Epenesa at 10 makes a lot of sense to me. If one of Wirfs or Thomas is still available at 10, I think that's a lock-in pick.
Yeah.
Then you get to 22, the Houston pick. As a result of the Laremy Tunsil trade, this is another very interesting one. Houston's going to be in a fight for that division with Indy. And if you're going to continue to, like, that, so making the playoffs versus not making the playoffs for Houston could swing the pick eight places, depending on how far Houston gets into.
I think they make it at least, though.
Right.
I think this is a low 20s pick.
Right, which that's where we have it right now. We have it at 22, which is the projection. And this is where you start to get into a nice conversation with the power that the Dolphins have, three first-round picks. Two second-round picks. They have the Saints as a result of the Eric McCoy trade during the 2019 draft last year. With five picks in the first two rounds, you have the freedom, especially once we kind of get past the top 10, where, you know, typically, like, you know, you'll hear quotes, you know, in March, this is a 15-player draft, this is a 13-player draft. Like, you know, like, these are the players who everyone knows is a bona fide first-rounder and everybody would want to have in the first round, and they're going to go in the first X number of picks. And then after that, it's which teams have which players on the board at which rankings. That's where, you know, like, where the deviation between teams really starts to become apparent. And that's where the Dolphins are in a great place to just go BPA, right? You're at 22.
Yeah.
You can have a player like, you know, let's say you have Jonathan Taylor as a top 10 talent in this class. Let's say you have, you know, Javon Kinlaw as a top 10 player in this class off of tools. Well, they could very easily still be sitting around. Let's say you have Dylan Moses injured, but he's top 10 player in this class for you. Nobody else is taking him because of the injury. Well, because you have so many picks, you can spend those picks on the BPAs even if they're not the biggest position of need for you. And that's where 22 and then 34 on the turnaround and the top of round two becomes really interesting for Miami. And so ton of capital. So things can go five bajillion different ways. But the main takeaway is after you address quarterback and then probably with the top 10 pick and the Steelers pick, get a high-impact player at edge, offensive tackle, or corner – then you get to just play the game. You get to, whoever drops to you, go get them. You know, just go off your board, get really talented players. They're going to start for you because you ain't got nobody on this roster.
Right.
So it's a good situation to be in.
That's a little bit of saving grace no matter what, is that whoever you pick, you're going to be able to get in there because that roster ain't very good. I think that, you know, not only looking towards the later picks of this draft, I think that you can make an argument that they can go best player available in a lot of different ways, even looking towards how many picks they have next year's draft as well. You know, you reserve that top pick wherever it's going to be for really your biggest need, hopefully at an impact position. This year it's going to be quarterback. There's a chance that next year it might be in the trenches again. Could be a secondary player, could be a big-time receiver, whatever. Depends how those other rounds go, but man, if you address that main position there, and I know I just kind of got done saying that you don't want to plan for a year ahead, and I'm not necessarily saying plan, but I am saying that when you have so many picks, knowing that this is a committed rebuild, this is something that's going to take a little bit of time, when it comes to picking best player available, I think you have a lot of freedom there, and you reserve that first pick, that highest impact pick, to attack the position that you need, hopefully that has a lot of emphasis. But the rest of the picks after that, I think certainly you look at your team needs, you look at what can help you the most, but you have a good amount of flexibility because of how many times that you can strike in the draft within the top 100 over the next 2 years. And I think that's the position that Miami's in, and I think it's the, you know, the position that they have strive to be in over the last 2 months to put themselves in a situation like this. And so that's kind of where I'm looking at Miami and what their philosophy might be in this draft as they kind of head into the offseason. Last AFC team that we're talking about today, Cincinnati Bengals. We just got done talking about Tua Tagovailoa, where his value might be as opposed to what Joe Burrow's been doing this season. Burrow's been a hot name to the Cincinnati Bengals in recent mock drafts, not just at the Draft Network, but kind of all over the internet to everybody that's been doing scouting so far.
Interesting.
You know, I don't want to say that I had Joe Burrow going number one overall first, but what's up? I probably didn't have him first. Probably somebody else had him before me, but I did have him a couple weeks ago because I think it makes a lot of sense. Cincinnati, as stated before, they're in this back and forth battle of who can lose more games between Miami and them. That offensive line is absolutely terrible. They're going to need a new quarterback. Oh man, it's just the needs for Cincinnati have mounted like they have for Miami. Linebackers in there, cornerback, wide receiver. They'll need edge help as well. There's just so many. The only positions they maybe don't need are like running back and safety, basically. And everything else is on the table for Cincinnati. But the thing about Cincinnati, Ben, they don't have the arsenal of picks that Miami does. So they've really got to hit on what they do, especially considering how bad this roster is. At the top, if they're picking one or two, I think it's certainly got to be one of two or Joe Burrow. Are you in the same boat?
Yeah, and that's why, like, I think the, you know, when we talk about how did Cincy get here, well, it was, you know, a smattering of injuries on the offensive line and questionable first round picks over the last couple of years and not really much development for some of your defensive young studs. Really, the guys were not in the secondary. And then, you know, the linebacker room is just, oh my God, like this, I've never seen a linebacker room this offensive in my entire life. So it's like a lot of like things that, like, you know, injuries and this and the other thing that brought you here. The first step of your rebuild is to sell at the deadline. Like, yeah, come man. On, guys.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yep.
Sell Dalton and sell Green. You have, in the 2020 NFL draft, all of your picks. In the 2021 draft, you have all of your picks. In 2020, I've never seen a team just not have traded future picks at all. And then for the team who is not, they have no other team's picks in 2020. Which is like very rare just from the beginning to have not traded a future pick. But then for that team to be as bad, as poorly off as the Bengals are, is shocking.
Yeah.
How are you this bad and also don't have future draft capital at the same time, right? This is a multi-year situation for Duke Tobin, who manages the front office there for Cincinnati. This is, you got, and the way you expedite it, the way you make this rebuild into more of a reload, is you sell Dalton and you sell
Green. It ain't a reload, but I understand where you're
right.
going.
The way you make this a 2-year rebuild instead of a 3-year rebuild or whatever, right? You know, so start Finley. You know, you get young players, but Stanley Morgan, Auden Tate, these guys get more snaps at wide receiver. You see what you've got with young players. But There's no reason to, oh yay, AJ Green's back from injury. We're 0-9. Like, what? Sell him. Teams will give you day two picks for Green.
Sanu just went for a second.
Right.
You've got to think AJ Green. You've got to think AJ Green's going for a day two pick. I mean, come on.
Right.
Just ship him
off. And now Sanu had a good contract situation to be sold. There's no doubt about that. Green's a free agent upcoming in this year. But if we're talking, so firstly, that's why Cincinnati got to sell him, because you're probably not going to retain him. You got to sign him to a deal next year.
I guess they'll get a third round comp pick for him, right?
Right. But that's why teams are going to be willing to trade for him, because you trade a three for Green, like the Eagles did this with Golden Tate last year. You trade a three for Green, then he walks in free agency and gives you a three.
Right.
So you just delayed a pick.
Right.
For the sake of to be able to rent Golden Tate for 8 games. Well, a competitor will do that with Green if Green's going to get healthy, which we expect Green to be healthy over the next couple of weeks. So, like, to me, this is a no-brainer situation. I think you're good at defensive tackle, though you need help at edge. I think you're good at safety. Jesse Bateman playing some real good ball, and you're good at corner. Everything else. And, like, obviously, offensive line, like, you know, you got to be able to get Andre Smith healthy, and you got to be able to get Jonah Williams healthy, and it's just, you know, a complete nightmare in terms of the players you've lost, and I get that. But offensive line could still use some help. And then it's, I mean, from a weapons perspective, especially if you sell Green, your pass catchers are the oft-injured Tyler Eifert and then, like, you know, Auden Tate, who this podcast stands unconditionally, but come on. We gotta reload here. So, yeah, it's a really weird spot because, yeah, it's going to be a first pick at quarterback. They're going to go ahead and take Tua. Yeah. And then you're going to sit and wait till 33? You gotta be able to accumulate more capital.
Yeah, and then
you gotta be able to sell.
The problem is that when you say that out loud, there you're like, "Oh, they're gonna sit at 33." My immediate reaction is, "No, they're not gonna sit at 33. They're gonna have to move up." But then all of a sudden, you're moving up. You're picking less. You know, they've got it. They've got to acquire more picks somehow, some way. Either you start losing a bunch of free agents that are good and getting some comp picks in there, or whatever it is. But they're gonna have to scout their ass off, man, because you've got to be able to move these guys, and you've got to be able to get value picks for them. And that's just the way it is.
Right. So, yeah, Cincinnati's in a weird spot because there's really not much for us to talk about until you move Green or you move Dalton. And,
well,
like, to me,
like, what's the next position? Let's say as it stands right now, they're picking at the top of the second round. What's the next look for you outside of them picking quarterback at number one?
If Dylan Moses is around 33, I'm there, heartbeat.
That's
Nick Vigil,
yeah.
Preston Brown. Kill me with a stick. It's a terrible linebacker.
Are we talking about, like, are we like beating, are we like beating you with the stick, or are we stabbing you with
the stick? I just need it to be slow and painful. So as to best emblem, whatever the verb of emblem is, signify the experience of this linebacking core.
I didn't know where you were going with that, so I'm glad that you
big bad. Big, bad, big, ugly. So, yeah, I mean, I'm super interested in, like, you know, you have him and you have Marcus Bailey, linebacker out of Purdue, both of whom had injuries this past year, may or may not be coming out for Dylan Moses. But, you know, you're in a position like kind of like, you know, the Titans did with Jeffrey Simmons. Obviously, they got Simmons back. But, you know, you're going to not be competing this year or this in 2020. So you can draft a guy who might take some time to rehab back and get him situated. Again, like, in the hypothetical of a Green sell, you absolutely are looking at a player like a CeeDee Lamb, a Tyler Johnson, a bigger downfield target to replace what you lost there.
Going to be there.
Right, and that's the thing is, like, we don't really know what our wide receiver class looks like in terms of who's going to go where. Because, like, that's the thing is, like, we say CeeDee's not going to be there. But if you told me wide receiver two off the board behind Judy was Jalen Reagor, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, there's going to be a team that likes him.
Wow.
You know, am I in on that? No, but, like, wide receiver position drafting is always about getting guys for specific molds. And if you feel like you already have a guy in the CeeDee Lamb mold, then you're going to go draft a Henry Ruggs or a Jalen Reagor, Tylan Wallace. Not the way, like this is how wide receiver drafting goes. You look over the past drafts.
Yeah.
Kelvin Benjamin went in the first round, brother. Needed that big body.
Yeah. I'm thinking of that too. And, like, where I really like Tyler Johnson. I like him as wide receiver two. I'd be worried if a team drafted him to be a wide receiver one. You know, that's kind of like where I am with a guy like him, even though I like his impact. There's guys like Colin Johnson as well, Brian Edwards. But if you got Auden Tate and he's a guy that you're going to keep around, you're kind of kind of going to want somebody to compliment him. Not that compliment means you ignore a guy that you like, but I'm just thinking. Right. I'm just thinking off the top of my head, so some of the guys in the wide receiver pool, because I think there's plenty of wide receiver talent to really help the Bengals out in rounds 2 and 3. It's just about getting, I think, the right one.
Yeah, you do have to ask yourself: are we planning for this team moving forward with John Ross or without John Ross?
I've never planned on John Ross being an asset for the Bengals at any point in time.
Right, and that's the thing is, like, if he's going to continue to be IR, then you have to say we need speed at the wide receiver position. But the thing is, you got to be able to swallow that pill and admit it. And I feel like we're overlooking Tyler Boyd here. Like, Boyd is also a good, like, intermediate guy.
No,
like,
I like Tyler Boyd.
Whatever. Yeah.
I like Tyler Boyd.
So, like, wide receiver isn't as off as you might think. But, yeah, like, it's become very clear in the absence of A.J. Green that you do need to add multiple bodies to this room in terms of the wide receiver position. If you can, again, if you sell Green, though, you get an opportunity to look at some of your younger guys and see if maybe they can step into a starting role for you next year. So that's the advantage of that. We'll see what happens there. So, yeah, I think once you go quarterback, you always want to add a weapon as well. You want to give him somebody to grow with. You want to give him somebody to rely on.
Or somebody to protect him.
Exactly, yeah. And so there's that. And then, like, I mean, defensively, I really think, like, defense is probably something you have to continue to ride with the guys that you have. You need a huge offensive facelift. Zach Taylor obviously is going to have specific guys that he wants to add and build around to kind of sculpt the offense in his image.
Sure.
So there's probably going to be an offensive-heavy approach, especially if you sell one of Dalton or Green. It's going to be offensive-heavy approach, and then you're going to reevaluate your defensive players probably around next year. Like I said, this is a multi-year process for Cincy.
All right, I'm making an executive decision.
Yeah, we should. I agree with this executive decision.
All right, we're going to go through every team in the NFL still on this podcast and do a five-hour-long podcast and break down the draft.
Trevor, I'm tired.
No, what we're going to do is we're going to stop it there. Those are the three AFC teams they were putting down this week. We are going to have the funerals for Atlanta and what was the other NFC team? And Washington later this week. We'll do that on a different episode because I like devoting enough time to really break down where these teams failed, what their offseason outlook is going to be, and then going into the draft, how they can rebuild. So I think we took a good amount of time on those three teams. I want to devote the correct amount of time to also looking at Washington and Atlanta in such detail. So we are going to do that later in the week. We're still going to touch on college football. We're still going to get to the NFL lines, and we're still going to do Fan Friday. We're going to get it all in. I don't know how, but Ben and I haven't let you guys down yet. So we're not going to start now. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.